talk is by Joy Cunningham. She's a technical advisor at Family Health International 360 within the Reproductive, Maternal, Newborn, and Child Health Department based in Durham, North Carolina. In her position, Joy manages a portfolio of projects on youth, reproductive, and sexual health and gender. And she's going to be talking about gender integration for youth to improve youth peer education. So, please.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. So I want to just start by acknowledging my colleagues at FHI who helped develop this resource I'm going to talk about, and also to state that the funding for the peer education guidelines was through USAID, through an award called Advancing Partners in Communities, which is led by JSI. FHI is a partner on that project. Okay, so we know that gender is a critical issue to consider when addressing youth sexual and reproductive health, and that harmful gender norms may cause negative outcomes, especially for girls. They can lead to earlier forced marriage, sexual violence, transactional sex, and all of those things can then lead to poor health outcomes such as unintended pregnancy, high HIV, unsafe abortion, maternal mortality. And while the health of girls is disproportionately affected by harmful gender norms, boys and young men may also experience poor outcomes, and that's an important thing to talk about as well. So for boys, harmful gender norms can encourage the demonstration of what we sometimes call hyper-masculinity, or the need to sort of prove their maleness through violence or high-risk behavior. And for a specific subset of boys and young men that are especially likely, they are especially likely to be harmed by rigid gender norms, and those are boys who do not conform to the expected masculine characteristics. And so those are boys that are gay or are perceived to be gay and are at an increased risk of being victims of violence. So I'm going to talk about marginalized boys and youth peer education, but it's important for me to just explicitly say at the beginning of this presentation that when we talk about gender integration into peer education, really one of the most important things we're talking about is addressing homophobia. So when we talk about ensuring equal access to youth peer education, I'm talking about reaching highly vulnerable girls. So those are girls who are maybe married or at risk for early marriage, or rural girls, or girls that are working as domestic servants. They're kind of invisible girls. Parenting adolescents, adolescents living with HIV, and young MSM. And these are the youth that would benefit the most from peer education, but are often excluded from peer education programming. Okay. So those of us who work in adolescent health know that adolescence is traditionally when there's a larger emphasis being placed on gender roles, and it provides this opportunity to address gender in a meaningful way. Young people's relationships are changing, and their roles in the household are changing, so their peer groups become more important. They might begin dating. They are discovering who they are sexually, their sexual preferences and orientation. And it's an opportunity to promote equality within dating relationships and help support young people and help to avoid discriminating against same-sex attraction. Young people are at a time in their lives when they are forming their own ideas about what it means to be a man or a woman, and they're hungry for information and what this means. They're malleable at this state. They also possess a really important asset, which is their sense of social justice, what's right and what's wrong, and they're questioning that. So they're at a great time to address gender norms. Okay, so the positive effects of addressing gender. YSRH programs that include gender content have achieved some positive outcomes, such as increased uptake in contraceptive use, improved knowledge about health information, and increased communication skills related to family planning, especially between young married adolescents. So we know that when girls have better access to health care and health information and they're able to control their fertility, then they are more likely to delay pregnancy, stay in school, and space their pregnancies. And for boys who receive information on harmful gender norms and gender equality, including homophobia, they're less likely to adopt these hyper-masculine behaviors and engage in violence and high-risk behaviors, and their health and the health of their partners is improved. When peer education programs address gender-based violence and create a self and welcoming space, they remove a significant barrier to full participation of all youth and help them to build a foundation from which they can advance their own rights. So peer education is a popular, versatile approach. It's cost-effective, it's widely used globally, and recent reviews are inconclusive about the long-term effects, but they do show that there's some evidence to demonstrate that well-designed, well-implemented programs can improve young people's health-related knowledge, attitudes, and skills, and increase their access to health services. But there is such a thing as benign neglect when it comes to youth peer education, and by that I mean that if programs are not intentional about being inclusive of marginalized youth, they could in fact contribute to their continued marginalization. So programs that do not target girls may actually exclude them, and girls may have less opportunity for participation in peer education due to having more responsibilities at home. Or maybe it's not safe for them to actually travel to the site of programming. We also know that girls that are experiencing gender-based violence are probably not going to be in a peer education program. And when young women are able to attend peer education, they may find that the gender norms at play in the program do not encourage their full participation. So, for example, role plays that are used or exercises may inadvertently reinforce these negative stereotypes, such as stories about where men are unable to resist the urge to have sex with a young woman based on how she's dressed, or tempting men to engage in sexual violence. Also, the absence of role plays or stories that are inclusive of young MSM or that don't embrace a broad definition of masculinity may further contribute to homophobia and exclude boys from full participation. So even if this level of explicit gender stereotyping is not present, the interactions within the group may marginalize youth from speaking out or participating or taking on leadership roles. And we do know that peer education tends to be led by boys or young men. So when peer education programs do not challenge these negative norms of what it is to be, quote unquote, a real man, the young men in the program may believe that it's important to engage in dangerous and harmful behaviors such as violence against women to sort of prove their masculinity. And the end result of the failure to acknowledge and address the role of gender inequality is programs that generally serve more boys than girls, and the girls and boys that they do serve are less vulnerable. So without addressing gender, this cycle is created where the privileged kids continue to experience the privilege, and girls and young MSM continue to be shut out of yet another avenue of programming that should be available to them. So changing gender norms with young people has been shown to be a way of redressing gender inequalities and improving reproductive health. And there is beginning to be some evidence that shows support for how gender integration can successfully change gender norms. Youth peer education offers this rare opportunity to work with young people to reset gender norms by examining and changing power dynamics and transforming relationships. And peer educators themselves can create new norms by showing that there are multiple ways that someone can be masculine or feminine. Peer education programs can also contribute to combating homophobia and making the link between the empowerment of girls and GBV and the importance of human rights for all, including young MSM. The benefit of attending peer education for girls is really twofold. It can build their leadership skills, and it can increase their social network, which we heard earlier is an asset related to several positive health outcomes. Okay. So based on all of what we were hearing, FHI, with funding from USAID in 2009, produced a resource called Evidence-Based Guidelines for Youth Peer Education. And the idea behind it was we knew this was a widely accepted and scaled-up method of delivering YSRH, but there was little put out there about how to use an evidence base to build your peer education program. So it's we partnered with UNFPA and YPEER, a global network of peer educators, to develop the resource. And it's really generic global guidance. It's not designed for any specific country. It's designed for developing countries. And we disseminated it in several sub-Saharan African countries, Kenya, Tanzania, Botswana, Zambia were some of our major countries where we use peer education networks to disseminate the resource. We gathered feedback, and really, really quickly what we heard back was that there was a need for more content on gender integration. So We recently just released a new version of the resource where we partnered with IntraHealth to incorporate gender content that includes the evidence base I just talked about and really concrete practical ways on how to incorporate gender into every aspect of a peer education program from starting it to the evaluation stage. And there's an emphasis on reaching vulnerable youth, addressing GBV and homophobia. Okay, so really quickly, I'm just going to talk about some of the ways we recommend incorporating gender into peer education. First of all, conducting a gender analysis to see how well a gender is being addressed. And it's important to say that this type of delivery of peer education requires a shift in thinking about peer education. We are used to thinking about it as a way to reach masses of kids. And what I'm talking about is in gender-sensitive and inclusive peer education programs is actually serving less kids, but serving those that need it the most. And that's a real shift, and especially with donors, because we're used to kind of this approach that's very inexpensive, and you know, we can say we've served thousands of kids. So some ways to do this include engaging young people who want to serve as partners before the implementation and throughout the entire process. So maybe saying we're going to just reach married girls, and we're going to focus on girls, and we're going to get a group of them together and talk about how to serve them from the very beginning, and maybe we're only going to serve 20 girls in this program. Use youth-led mapping exercise, so talking to married girls, for example, about where other married girls are, how do you reach them, what are the avenues for access. Training girls and marginalized boys to help collect this information on how best to serve their peers and how they can be peer educators themselves. Working with younger adolescents, so when we talk about peer education, we're often talking about 18, 19, 20-year-olds, and what we're saying is that we need to reach kids a lot earlier. We need to reach them before some of those gender norms are beginning to be set in. Connecting with programs that build livelihood skills, especially for girls. Okay, my last slide. So giving marginalized youth incentives to participate. For example, there's a program that Pathfinder supports in Mozambique that provides waivers for school fees for kids who participate in a peer education program, and it allows greater access for girls to participate and also continue to be in school. Talk to girls and young MSM about how they can participate in programs. Find out how they see themselves in terms of their strongest contributions and help determine the criteria for their success. Establish both a GBV and a child protection guideline practices and procedures and note the overlap between those two and the distinction. Train peer educators to be able to appropriately respond to GBV within their peer education groups, not be responsible for handling it, but how to get that other peer to a safe adult. And then finally, develop a clear set of expectations about peer educators' roles and responsibilities. Develop a code of conduct that clearly communicates that peer educators themselves will not participate in any form of gender-based violence, including sexual harassment, sexual exploitation, abuse, or make any homophobic comments, and ensure that potential peer educators understand and agree that girls and MSM are equal and important leaders in sessions, and that they should be safe for all people, regardless of their sexual orientation. This is the website where you can download the peer education guidelines. They're an electronic only resource at this time. That's it. Thank you.